It's beginning to rain, rain, rain in the voice of our Father. Sing, whosoever will come drink of this water. I promise to pour my spirit out on your sons and your daughters. If you're thirsty and dry, look up to the sky. It's beginning.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars, inviting you to worship with us today at Bible Home Church, coming to you from Austin, Texas. Hello, friends. Great to be with you again. You know, we're going to continue our series, How to Escape the Pollution and Bondage of This World. And we're going to continue this series for a number of weeks because it's very, very important to you. Each of us wants to escape the bondage and pollution of this world. And we have to understand this, what it means. And then, of course, we have to go out and help other people to escape the pollution and bondage of this world. We're going to get right into it today. Of course, you know, we never really solicit funds as such, but we do thank you, and we just want to tell you how much we appreciate your financial support. We also want you to know that we'll be delighted to pray for you if you have a need, or if you have a comment on our program, we'll be glad to hear from you as well. Now we're going to have some beautiful music. Janet Paschal, she certainly has a voice like an angel, and I think you're going to love this song by Janet Paschal from one of the Gaithers albums. And then right after this song from Janet Paschal, we'll begin our message for today.
Jesus, take this trial trip. I'm surprised they haven't put a tax on the air we breathe. You may not believe this, but government bureaucrats in many states and in the federal government are now trying to figure out how to tax people based on the amount of rain water that falls on their land. So I guess once they start taxing your rain water, you have to pray that God won't send more rain, because the more rain you get, the more taxes you'll have to pay. But it doesn't seem like anybody wants to revolt over that today, because they seem to have enough money that they can pay the government 80 cents of every dollar, and the other 20 cents is enough to live a pretty good life. So they say it's okay. Or at least they're not that much upset about it. They haven't overthrown the government since the 1700s. That's why we fought against the Nazis and the Japanese Empire. That's why we waged the Cold War against the communists. That's why we have sworn to destroy all vestiges of terrorism for freedom, liberty, but mostly for prosperity. For prosperity, to maintain our way of life, to keep what we've got, to keep our riches. Our nation was founded, wrote Thomas Jefferson, on the people's desire, even hunger, even thirst for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Our founding fathers actually said, we declare that this is what our goal is. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You know, they say Jefferson actually borrowed that from Englishman philosopher John Locke. He had written an essay similar to our own Declaration of Independence at one time, many of the same concepts. He used the phrase, life, liberty, and the pursuit of property. Well, that seemed a little bit too base. That seemed a little bit too material. So Jefferson changed it to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. What is happiness, though? Well, it seems like America defines happiness as more and more money. And if you've got money, you can have security. If you've got money, you can have freedom and liberty. You can buy these things. Even if you're a murderer, you can buy you a fine lawyer and continue free. Continue in your liberty. Continue in your prosperity. If you got enough money, you can buy everything. O.J. Simpson did. Money, no doubt, is our chief aim. And friends, listen to me. I believe that money is your greatest enemy. Money will enslave you. It is not for no reason at all that Jesus told the Jews that they had to choose between God and mammon. He said, you cannot serve two masters. You must choose between God and mammon. Why didn't he say God and the devil? You can't serve two masters. You got to choose one or the other, the devil or God. He didn't say that. He didn't even bring up the devil as a choice. He said you've got to choose between mammon, which means money, the love of money, and God. And you know that choice still confronts us today. It is right in front of our face, just like James Carville's little sign for Bill Clinton, the candidate. It's the economy, stupid. God puts a sign up in our face. It's the money, stupid, or me, he adds. Is it not true that we elect or re-elect politicians on the basis of how prosperous they can make us and keep us? TV preachers tell us, if you want to have money, all you have to do is give more money to me. It works. I suppose that this ministry power prophecy could bring in a lot more income if I just told you that God will prosper you if you give to us. Well, you know, in a roundabout way, I believe he will. I believe there are people out there who do have needs, and God does honor them. And you know, sometimes God actually, and here is where, I guess this is the reason why we just don't get all the money that Trinity Broadcasting Network and all the others do. It's because I believe, honestly, that God may actually take money away from some people. Why would he do something like that? Because he loves you, and it's hurting you. You know, I've been on a diet recently to lose some weight, I think it'll be good for me if I put some of the food away. Say, I don't need that food. Obviously, it would be good for my heart, be good for my conditioning. I'd probably do a better job for the Lord. So I put some food away. I think I'm not going to have those extra calories and carbohydrates. Is it hurting me? No, it's helping me. There are some people out there that are addicted to the love of money. God may have to put them on a diet. He may have to wean them away from money. He may have to make them poor so they won't crave to be rich. Sounds like a paradox. But I've always told you, my friends, isn't it true? God is a paradox. God is a contrarian. He does exactly the opposite of what most people would do. Certainly what the world does. TV preachers say, give money to us and God will give you more things, more stuff. Give us $10 and God will give you 100. Give us 100 and God will send you 10,000. Nonsense. Listen, friends, you stick close to God and I'll tell you how much money God will give you. Exactly how much you need. Wow. How much is that? I don't know, but God has the answer. I'm not so sure you and I know how much money we need, but God does. You may say, well, he's sure not given me what I need, what I think I need. Well, what you think doesn't mean anything to God. I'm sure he at least considers it, but he just might reject it. You say, does God understand? I like to give my wife fur coats and jewels, and I like to buy Cadillacs and Lexuses, and I... Well, you're talking about what you like. You're not talking about what you need. But if God thinks you need that, then that's fine. I pray he'll give it to you. But it might ruin you. It might destroy you. I don't really read much about it, but every once in a while I'll just glance at an article in the newspaper about people who have won the lottery. And they've received millions of dollars, but they say, you know, it just has not made me any happier. In fact, some actually say, it ruined my life. Now, I know there are those out there that say, well, hey, give it to me. Let it ruin my life. Oh, yeah? I believe most people mean that. Politicians say to us, we care about your prosperity. And your happiness will be assured if you just allow us to stick our hands into your pocketbooks or into your purse. Just let us get our little mitts into your purse, into your pocket. Let us extract a huge sum of money. We'll spend it, of course, for your good and happiness. They know how to spend your money better than you do. They say, there's no doubt that the people believe enough money can buy life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I read recently where somebody said, did you notice that the beautiful young girls, they'll go out with an old man, but only if he has money? That's probably true. I'm assuming that Anna Nicole Smith, you know, the big blonde gal, she didn't go and marry that old man because she just liked older men. She wanted his money. But from what I understand, she's not a whit happier. She's alcoholed up. She's doped up. And she's headed down the pathway of hell. From the looks of things, I don't think she'll make it to 40 years of age. But she'll die with a lot of money. She'll die with a big house. But Paul said, you can't take anything with you. You came into this world with nothing, and surely, said the Apostle Paul, you're going to leave it with absolutely nothing. Think about that. Now, because of our immoral leaders, religious and otherwise, my friends, we now equate money with all the worldly things that we think we need. We even equate money with God, although Jesus himself said you have to choose between money and God, mammon and God. We still say, why, the more money we have, the more God must be blessing us. I assure you, if you drive up in a big car to a church today, almost any church in America, dressed fit to kill and go down and rent the biggest car you can and go to a church for the first time in your life, and I bet you at least 10 people there after welcoming you to their church, will look at your clothes and your jewels and your car, and they'll say, God surely is blessing you, isn't he? That's a sign of blessing. That's what they think. And that's where they're wrong. Listen to me, my friends. I get letters from prisoners in the federal and state penitentiaries of America who are rich. They don't have any money. They don't have as much as you and I have. They don't need it. The government gives them everything they need. But you know why they're rich? I have had men write to me from the prison cell, and women. And they said, Brother Tex, I'm richer now than I've ever been. When I was out robbing and stealing and taking other people's money and spending it on nonsense, I was a wastrel. I was no good. And I was unhappy. Now, I love to wake up. I love to read the Bible. I love to pray. I love to meet with my brothers here in prison that know Jesus. This is the best time of my life, they tell me. Isn't that a paradox? They're having a ball in prison. They don't go to drunken parties. They don't have wine, women, and song. But boy, they're happy. They truly are thrilled. Now, I'm not saying they don't want to get out. Now, don't get me wrong. They know they've made mistakes. They know that they've sinned. They know they're criminals. And you know why they know it? Because God put it in their heart to know those things, to have a conscience, to feel guilt. But they've been forgiven. Shakespeare, the great British writer, once said, the world is mine oyster, which I with sword shall plunder. I think that's pretty close to it. I may be off a word or two. A lot of people think that today. The world's like an oyster. All I have to do is open it up, and out will come the pearl. That's what they want. The pearl, meaning more money. I remember a poster some years ago that really caught my eye. And on the poster, it showed a long, long driveway, the image, the picture. And at the end of this long and winding driveway was a big mansion sitting way out there in a field by itself. The man, whoever owned that, must have had a lot of money. He probably had acres after acre after acre, and the mansion was multi-million dollar. And there was a Rolls Royce pulled up in the driveway. And the poster said, he who has the most toys when he dies wins. Looking in our backyard here, and I see 1, 2, 3, 4 deer. They're eating some deer corn that our secretary put out. There's about 4 squirrels, too. They're all having a ball out there. You know, I think I'm richly blessed just to be able to see these beautiful deer and these squirrels scamper around amidst the trees and the beauty of God's nature. I think that's one of the riches that God has given us. Can you imagine what we're going to have in heaven if it's this beautiful here on earth to see these things? And by the way, I'm looking over, we have a cat in the ministry now. I've never been a cat person. Now, don't get mad at me. I've always been a dog person. But this poor little cat wandered up, and, well, it was just a little kitten, and it was all wet, and it was meowing, and you know how Wanda is, and I guess I'm that away too. We took in a little cat, and then Sandra, our broadcast engineer, you know, she's a little soft-hearted too, and she began to give it treats, and then Michelle, Jerry, and, well, this cat is just pure spoiled. It's laying over here on my couch right in my office right now. Never does a lick of work, and it wants us to pet it all the time and give us treats. Well, okay, we'll keep doing it for this cat. It's grown a little bit now. What is it, about a year, Sandra, a year old? Well, maybe not a year old. I'm not sure. Oh, is it a whole year? And by the way, this cat has cost us money in the ministry. We had to get this cat de-skunked. It went out and got in a tangle with a skunk. We came in on a Monday morning, and boy, the smell almost knocked us over. And the cat just smelled to high heaven. No, I shouldn't say that. That's what they say, high heaven. It smelled to lower hell, let's put it that way. And we had to take it down to veterinarian, and and get it de-skunked. I guess they have some special cleaning materials. We tried about everything here, and it didn't work. So this cat, of course, we had to get it its vaccinations and all that. And it lives here in our big ministry building. It goes wherever it wants to. You know, it hides up in little shelves and jumps on you when you walk by and things like that. It's got the run of the building. That's why I like a dog person. You know, they don't surprise you, Sandra, when you walk down the hall. You know, you walk down the hall and this cat jumps on your back and scares the devil out of you, which may be a good idea if you've got the devil in you. But it's a lovable cat. It's a lovable cat. I've grown to sort of like cats. So folks, I want you to know, I guess I'm a cat person now. This cat's pretty nice here. But it's a beautiful cat. And I do feel blessed that God gave us this little cat. I feel blessed God has given me a wonderful wife and some tremendous people who work with me here in the ministry. You see, there's blessings, there's riches to be found in things that other people say, well, that's just ordinary. No, it's not. It is mighty, my friends. I feel rich every day when I wake up and look in the mirror and smile and know that God is going to be with me that entire day. But most people don't look at it like that. They accept the poster, which, by the way, I told you about. It was a best-selling poster. He who has the most toys when he dies wins. Really? And then there was another poster I saw. The women would like this, I guess. I don't know. I think Wanda did smile about it at one time, but, you know, she wouldn't comment on it. It says something like this. The only difference between men and boys is the price of their toys. Well, we men are going to have to make it one about the women, something like that. But in any case, there may be some truth to that. Men seem to spend a lot of money on toys, whether it's a new hunting rifle or shotgun, or there's so much interest in these NASCAR stock races and all. I don't know. There's all kinds of things men can spend money on. You know, the only thing I seem to spend money on is books. I love books. I love Bibles. I've got so many Bibles. And, you know, they all say the same thing. They're all King James. But I just love different covers and things, and I love Bibles. And I have about 40 Bibles. I love the old antique Bibles, you know, you find in antique stores. They don't cost a lot. Probably all the Bibles I have put together probably don't cost as much as one man's collection of guns, which, you know, I don't have. I'm not really a gun person, but I like Bibles. I just love to have them around. I feel good with a Bible in my, you know, living room. It just makes me feel good. By the way, I would like to ask you a question, my friends here in the ministry, listening to me on radio. I'm not mystical or supernatural. I think it's a matter of respect. But when I have a Bible, I make sure that I never put anything on it. And I make sure it's always the highest thing. If I have a stack of books and I have the Bible, I always put it on top. If I have a glass of water or something, I'll never put it on top of my Bible. Oh, no. I treat that Bible like it's some kind of a piece of gold cloth. I do. It's not that I believe that, you know, if I mistreat the Bible, you know, God is going to send lightning down and strike me, because I realize the words are what matters, not the actual material Bible itself. But I think that's a matter of respect. I just can't believe it when I go to some people's house and I see the Bible is underneath a stack of magazines. I just feel like it ought to be on top of everything. Now, am I strange for being like that? I'd like to hear from some of you good friends out there. You may say I've made an idol out of the Bible. It's not that. I just want to show respect to God. It's His Word. And I don't think it ought to, you know, be treated like a trash can, your Bible. It ought to be treated as the most precious gift you've got in your home. Ought to be taken care of. Well, anyway, that's the way I sort of feel about it. And you know, when I've worn a Bible out, I don't like to throw it away or anything else. One that says, well, what do you have this Bible for? It's the cover's coming off. It looks like it's 150 years old, but you just bought it, you know, 5 years ago. Why don't you get rid of this? Oh, no, I can't do that. That's a Bible. I can't get rid of that because I look at it very lovingly, you see. And after all, I look in the mirror, and I'm getting a little old, too, and have wrinkles and gray hair. Don't throw me away. But I'm not trying to equate me with the Bible, but, you know, there are some things that are just sort of precious. Well, anyway, listen, my friends. Some evangelists are now declaring that to draw more men to God, we've got to show them how worldly we can be. We've got to find what is attractive to men out in the world and give them the same thing. Could be entertainment. That's why we have Christian wrestling matches. Some churches are now sponsoring. A Methodist church here in Austin, Texas, said we can draw people if we start having dramas and plays. And they had My Fair Lady and these other plays. Have nothing to do with the Bible or Jesus. There's some churches that are literally having rock and roll concerts, R-rated movies.
If you're thirsty and dry, look to the sky. It's beginning to rain.
You've been listening to Pastor Tex Mars and Bible Home Church. Please join with us in worship next week as we continue to honor the remarkable Word of God.